This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
In the meantime, though, in some local headlines, Petronas has posted an 8% increase in its net profit for the second quarter ended 30th of June this year to 14.7 billion ringgit from 13.6 billion a year earlier.
So, I mean, this result comes as comes from a weakened ringgit against the dollar. Revenue for the quarter was marginally lower at 59 billion ringgit compared to 59.1 to 59.2 in the previous year's corresponding quarter. And this was mainly due to the impact of lower average realized price recognized for petroleum products as well as liquefied natural gas.
Now, the good news is that for the first half of the year, net profit did rise 9% to 28.9 billion ringgit from 26.6 billion ringgit a year earlier. Now, this was on the back of higher revenue of 121 billion ringgit against 117 billion in the first half of 2018. Now, during the period, and this is significant, Petronas made 15.7 billion ringgit in capex and largely attributable to upstream projects. Petronas President and Group CEO Tan Sri Wan Zulkifli said that the group's expenditure year-to-date is slightly behind its budgeted capex for the year, but added that investments will pick up in the second half of the year.
So he also touched on some of the dividend expectations for next year, and he did say that he's expecting a lower dividend payout to the government in 2020 compared to the 54 billion ringgit paid in 2019. But there also has been some news over Petronas Gas, because Wan Zulkifli said that Petronas is supporting the government's move towards a more open gas market, as it would then function more efficiently, and apparently Petronas is already geared up for the liberalisation of the gas market.
And Petgas has already taken the necessary steps over the past few years to sort of prepare themselves to compete in an open market. According to Petronas Executive Vice President of Gas and New Energy Business, Adif Zulkifli, Petronas expect the power sector to reach a market price parity for gas in October this year. It will be implemented in January 2020, but then on, it will be an open competition.
Well, this is in line with the government's move, right, to dismantle all monopolies. So it can only be a positive thing. I mean, one of the other things is that, of course, the government will now stop approving new IPPs or projects that come with power purchase agreements. I think the end of the day, the point is to basically lower the cost of producing any power and have a free market basis, yeah. i.e. even the consumers like us can choose which power company wants to supply us, and that's just based on the rates they offer. Just like telephones, like mobile phone operators.
Let the market decide, basically. And I think there have still been some details yet to be ironed out in regards to the government's plan to liberalise the overall energy market, the power supply market, because it's still unclear whether the initiatives are going to result in lower electricity tariffs, which are already quite competitive anyway currently. But the other government initiative thus far has been in regards to Khazanah Nasional, because we have seen quite a lot of news recently about Khazanah disposing of some of their assets, and apparently they are set to sell their entire investment, which is a 55% stake in an Indonesian toll highway, which is PT Lintas Marga Sedaya. So the PT is the concession holder and operator of the Cikopo Palimanan toll road, popularly called Cipali, which is one of the longest toll roads in Indonesia.
So the stake will be sold to Canada Pension Plan Investment Board, and the stake currently is being held by Plus, a subsidiary of UEM, which is ultimately owned by Khazanah. So Canada Pension said that the transaction is expected to complete sometime in the fourth quarter this year. Now, this highway that we're speaking about here, it spans about 117 kilometres, and the Cipali Toll Road is critical road link on the Java Island, as it is part of the Trans-Java Toll Road Network. So this news is part of Khazanah's divestment spree to sort of spring clean and unlock value.
Yeah, because last November, it sold a 16% stake in IHH Healthcare to Mitsui & Co. for 8.42 billion ringgit. It's also selling Prince Court Hospital to IHH for 1.02 billion ringgit. And at the end of July this year, Khazanah's JV with Temasek Singapore also announced that they will be selling the office and retail units of its dual property development in Singapore.
So for a take on Khazanah strategy this morning, we turn to Jayant Menon, lead economist at the Asian Development Bank. Thank you very much for joining us, Jayant. So why, in your take, is Khazanah selling off their assets?
I think Khazana has stated themselves that they want to have a new strategic focus where they want to actually pare down some of their investments, especially the so-called non-strategic assets. There's also a focus on reducing their investments offshore, places like London, Mumbai, Silicon Valley, and also a lot publicized in the newspapers is selling off assets in neighboring Singapore. And this is all part of, a restructuring of Khazana. They were given quite a bit of bad press not long ago with the new administration, with accusations of manipulation and so on under the previous government. And so I think they want to clean up their shop and be a bit more focused, and that's not a bad thing. I think they should also probably look at selling off some of their domestic assets that are, not performing that well, especially in sectors in which there's no need for government to be involved. And these will also help revitalize the private sector, try and bring back private investment. I think there is evidence that the huge GLC presence in some sectors has been crowding out private investment. And I think Khazana should look at divestments in these areas so that it is not blocking the private sector from doing their part and increasing their influence and role.
And what might they do with the disposal proceeds?
Oh, well, that's a billion-dollar question. But I think, to be realistic, Malaysia's debt burden, there's some controversy over the amount. The high end says 1 trillion or more. But whichever estimate you look at, it's huge and it needs to be addressed. But there's also an ongoing fiscal constraint, right? The fiscal or budget deficit is under pressure and it needs to be addressed. So I wouldn't be surprised if some of this money at least goes towards, propping up the government coffers, especially at a time where, there's a very uncertain global environment with the US-China trade war. So Malaysia is a highly trade-dependent economy, and also volatile oil prices, right?
And Jan, what kind of assets might they acquire then?
Khazana had overseen the transformation program for the GLCs not that long ago, right, in the late 2000s. And that's where they tried to bring in market forces to make the GLCs behave more like private firms and more competitively. But one thing was clear, at the end of the transformation program, the share of GLCs in the economy actually went up rather than down. So as a divestment program, that did not work. I wonder if something similar might happen again here in the future. Maybe not, because now actually the government is a lot more cash strapped and also there are better checks and balances in place. But there could be some diversification of their holdings. If they start focusing in on areas where there's clear social needs and there's a role for government to provide that social function, then that's not a bad thing.
So can we draw parallels then between what Khazana is doing now and what and Temasek, which maintains their international presence?
Right. I mean, both Khazana and Temasek are huge sovereign wealth funds, but both Malaysia and Singapore are facing different kinds of challenges right now. And also the governance systems in the two countries are also different. So we need to bear those critical differences in mind when we make these sorts of comparisons. You know, Malaysia is fiscally constrained and it has a very large debt burden, which Singapore doesn't have to deal with at the moment. And so its priorities need to be quite different. So once we overcome the current debt and fiscal constraints, then we can consider looking at a more, adventurous international investment program. But right now, I think there are domestic needs that need to be addressed. Singapore doesn't have those same constraints to the same degree, so they have a lot more leeway. But Malaysia has to be a bit more disciplined about how it goes about using its scarce resources in addressing debt and fiscal problems it's facing.
Thank you so much, Jayant. And that was Jayant Menon, lead economist at Asian Development Bank, giving us his thoughts on Khazanah's strategy. And he mentioned an interesting point there when we asked him what kind of assets might we see a Khazanah acquire, which is that he wants to see Khazanah maybe get into more of the social protection bandwagon.
Yeah, I'm a little bit conflicted about that, I have to say, because I'm not sure what is Khazanah's priority, right? Is it about developing our country, improving our economy? It used to be the case whereby it was very strategic and very long-term, and it was a combination of international and domestic investments. But my fear about just going domestic is that at the end of the day, then there's no diversification, right? We put all our eggs into
one basket.
And we have to think about things in a not just long term, but really, really super long term, right? And if we shy away from the risky assets or the risky investments, then do we in the long term also lose out?
Right. And so that is interesting, especially when you were asking about social impact, whether or not Khazanah has a role in that. When you talk about social, sometimes you can't really speak about ROI that easily, right? Whether that is also their role. I mean, because a social enterprise, for an example, they need money, they need some form of investment coming in, and for it to continue rolling over, for it to work.
But is that Khazanah's role or is that the government's role?
Well, that's interesting.
And are we conflicted as usual?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a question yet remaining to see how Khazanah answers that. Right now, though, we are heading into the 7:30 news, and after that, more international stories for you. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.